Okay, I think we can start the session. Yeah, so I welcome all of you for Sutta teaching session. So we are regularly conducting this on every Wednesday, but since last time I couldn't conduct due to the falling of Uposatha day, I shifted it on Sunday. But from next Wednesday onwards, actually we can do it on Wednesdays. And as you can see, I have shared my screen, which is displaying Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, and this is the sutta that we were discussing right now. So this sutta is available in Majjhima Nikaya, and it deals with elements. So as you know, Buddha explains this so-called person, so-called individual, in different manner, very much like giving a different perspective. So typically we think, I am a man, I am a woman, I am father, I am daughter, I am brother, I am sister, I am wife, I am husband. So likewise, we have this typical conventional sort of understanding. But Buddha is taking us beyond that and giving some deeper perspectives about this experience. So in this Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, this is a very beautiful story behind this sutta. So I'll just briefly explain the reason why Buddha was preaching this sutta. In one occasion, King Bimbisara and King Pukkusati were unseen friends. They were living fairly in a distant place, but they were quite trustworthy and they are quite friendly with each other. So as a result, they used to exchange various valuables. So say for example, King Pukkusati sent certain valuables to King Bimbisara. Similarly, King Bimbisara also sent some valuables to King Pukkusati. So this kind of a long-term good relationship was there between them. So in one occasion, King Pukkusati has sent very valuable stuff like gems and gold, all these items to King Bimbisara. So at that time, King Bimbisara was thinking, what is the precious thing that I can offer to my friend? So there he understood that I can offer the message of the Buddha. And so therefore he wrote certain Dhamma and he informed that the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha has arisen in the world. So as a result, so he is sending this message with a messenger. So this message reached Venerable King Pukkusati, and he actually went to his topmost floor in his palace and he read the message, and immediately he got sort of inspired because of this message. So he too is a very meritorious person. So therefore, after listening to or after going through the message from King Bimbisara, so he was quite happy about it. So as a result, and he went through the whole message and started to practice meditation. So since he being a very devoted person for meditation in his previous lives, so he was able to attain jhana with less time. So you know, if someone has a lot of past experience, so it's a matter of putting back him into the same track. So then compared to the others, so this person can easily attain jhana. So this is a kind of a fact. And so accordingly, King Pukkusati was able to attain jhana, and now he is experiencing it, enjoying it. And later he wanted to become a monk on behalf of the Buddha. So then he brought ball robes from the shop, and then he himself become a monk, and then gone out of the palace in a secret manner and approaching the Buddha. So there Buddha understood that he is having less lifespan. So therefore Buddha too left Jetanarame, and now he is approaching King, or this now the monk Pukkusati, Venerable Pukkusati. So at that time, Pukkusati understood that it is not enough time to go to meet the Buddha, as now it is already dark. night. So he got the permission from one of the potter. So this potter has his warehouse, its workshop, and it is empty in the night. So he got permission from him, and he stayed there. And Buddha also approached there, and Buddha asked him permission from the potter, and potter said, no problem, there is enough space available, but there is already one monk, one ascetic, and if he give permission, you may stay. So then Buddha approached Venerable Pukkusati and asked, is it all right to stay here, spend one night here? So then Venerable Pukkusati said, no problem, there are enough space available, so please be my guest. So then Buddha understood that this person, Venerable Pukkusati, is somewhat preferred to be alone in a attend jhana, and so he spent several hours at night in jhana. And Buddha too didn't go to preach, rather he himself attained samapatti and stayed silently. After a while, both emerged from their concentration, and then Buddha just inquired from Venerable Pukkusati, on behalf of whom that you became a monk, from where you are coming, have you ever met your teacher? If you met your teacher, that when Buddha was asking, Venerable Pukkusati mentioned that I went forth on behalf of the Buddha who came from Sakyan family. And then Buddha asked, have you ever seen him? And then he said, no, I never see him. So then Buddha asked, if you see him, were you able to recognize him? And again he said, no, I don't know about his marks, so I don't know how to recognize him. So then Buddha asked a question, is it all right if I preach you some Dhamma? And then Venerable Pukkusati agreed and allowed Buddha to preach. And he is addressing Buddha as a friend, because he didn't know that this is the Buddha. And Buddha also didn't want to expose or reveal that he is the teacher. He is the master on behalf of whom that Venerable Pukkusati gone forth. But rather, Buddha also was very, in a way, humble and didn't want to do any sort of advertising. And he immediately get into the Dhamma and he started preaching. So this sutta is coming like that. So now Buddha is preaching Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, and now he is giving this information. So he is telling this so-called person is nothing but six elements. So this is one explanation. As I said before, so we typically think I am a man, I am a woman, I am a mother, I am a father, I am a daughter, I am a son. So likewise, we have so many different designations, different identifications. But Buddha is giving an entirely different explanation here, and he is telling this so-called person is nothing but six elements. And then he is telling this so-called person is six bases of contact. That's another explanation. And then he is talking about this person is a kind of exploration of mind. Now whenever we see something, accordingly the mind explores the pleasurable parts, pleasurable components, information available in that object. Similarly, sometimes mind explores the sorrowful content in the sight. Similarly, the mind may examine neutral information available in the sight. So likewise, so in terms of the behavior of the mind, so Buddha says it is 18 kinds of mental exploration. So this is what a person is called. And then he is giving another explanation, telling now he is coming to a different stage, and now he is telling this so-called person has to have some sort of a foundation, and those are four foundations. And therefore the person then very much like interpreted as four foundations, establishing four foundations. Interestingly, this is not the Satipatthana, for foundations related to the mindfulness, but this is an entirely different foundations, and we'll discuss them one by one. And then he's doing more deeper explanations, that is number 5 and number 6. So when someone is well established in these foundations, so then he is at peace. So he can become really peaceful. So that is the attainment of arahantship. So that is another explanation. So we can say that he is a noble person now, enlightened person now. And what is the explanation for an enlightened person? So that is what given here. And another thing is that when related to the practice, he is telling one should not neglect wisdom and should preserve truth and should cultivate relinquishment and should train for peace. So this kind of an explanation is there. There are basically 6 explanations are given and as a summary, and now Buddha is explaining one by one. So we were discussing a couple of them during last couple of weeks. Say for example, this person consists of 6 elements. Most of you have heard about these elements: earth element, water element, fire element, air element, space element, and consciousness element. So the whole experience, the human experience, all living experience can be explained according to this model. So there are physical components, physical attributes, as well as the mental attribute. This is one explanation. We discussed this already. And then the so-called person is nothing but 6 bases of contact. Because you know, I get in contact with the forms, sights. Then ear in contact with sounds. Nose in contact with various smells, fragrances. Then tongue in contact with various tastes. Body in contact with various tactile sensations. And of course the mind in contact with various mental objects. So as a result, this contact is one important point here. So accordingly, so one can say this is the so-called person, so-called being, is nothing but 6 bases of contact. And then he's giving another explanation. This person consists of 18 kinds of mental exploration. When one look at something using eyes, so how are we managing our eye? How are we using our eye? So whenever we come across any kind of interesting information, something beautiful, something important, so immediately assume that it is generating some amount of joy, happiness. So as a result, so we explore more and more information which is more productive to that happiness, to that pleasure. Similarly, when there is any kind of say sorrowful information, grief, which is producing grief, still we explore more and more. So this is what even unknowingly happens. So when certain amount of grief is generated, still we are not going out of it, rather we are even memorizing it again and again, recollecting it, or else we are exploring more and more information currently available in it. Though it is increasing our grief, we are continuing it. Similarly, if one is interested of the information detail available in the site which is producing equanimity, that also is explored, examined, investigated. So therefore we can understand with respect to the eye, so these 3 kinds of explorations are there. When it is producing happiness, we still explore. When it is producing grief, we still going to explore. We are using the mind to grab information, receive information, examine and get more refined information. And again, when there are neutral information, when again neutral feelings are generated, still we are trying to get more and more detailed, precise information, observation. So these things are going on. So similarly, we can apply the same kind of pattern to the sounds which we hear from our ears. So whenever a sound is present, so we, if it is producing some happiness, so we are exploring it, we are listening it, attentively listening it. And then if it is generating some sort of an unhappiness, anger, irritation, so we are interested about it. We want to listen it carefully. What are the facts there? Are they really factual? Are they real true? So likewise, we are turning our ear towards that sound and we are trying to explore more and more detail. Similarly, if there is any another sound which we found interesting, important, so at that point we are turning our ear and trying to get more information. So likewise, we can apply that same kind of a scenario to this ear as well. Similarly to the nose, similarly to the tongue, similarly to the body and to the mind. So whenever mind encounters any kind of a mind object, so if it is generating some joy, so we are expanding it, exploring it, we are adding to it. So likewise, we started the mental formations. On the other hand, if it is generating little amount of sorrow, grief, we don't stop it. We may continue to think about it and we add to it. We take various other past memories, we project it to the future. So likewise, we start fabrication. So the mind starts to explore. And again, if we found something equanimous, and still if you don't stop, we may start to think again and again, thinking about the same subject. So mind is now in the active mode. So likewise, related to these six senses, one can understand. So 18 types of explorations are there. Even though the sense data is coming through these eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mental objects are coming towards the mind. So these are in a way some passive objects, passive senses we can say. But the mind is getting activated once this passive information is available. So actually this is well explained in science as well. So whenever the light rays are hitting the retina, so it is making some sort of an inverted image, and that being decoded, translated by the brain. So likewise, so all the perceptions, recognition, and all these things are happening in the brain. So more and more information being extracted and more attention being paid. So likewise, this whole sense impingement sort of stimulates mental participation, mental stimulation, mental exploration. So therefore, we can understand, so the whole experience one can define based on this sense stimulation. And sense stimulation leading towards sort of mental exploration. So this is the scenario that Buddha is explaining, and he is telling, so therefore this so-called person, so-called being is nothing but 18 types of mental exploration. So this is another explanation. And then we touch the other part last time. So Buddha is now telling, this person has four foundations, four results we can say. The foundation of wisdom, foundation of truth, foundation of relinquishment, and foundation of peace. So these are the four types of foundations that Buddha is explaining in this sutta. And in a way, these are fairly deep, we can say. So therefore, we are taking some time to explain these things one by one. And now we started the foundation of wisdom. With respect to the wisdom, Buddha says one should not neglect wisdom. In that sense, what we need to understand is that we have to spend some energy to understand what is this wisdom, to acquire this wisdom. So this wisdom does not seem coming immediately or coming automatically as we getting older, but rather we have to practically do something in order to improve this wisdom. So this is where we have to practically get into the meditation, especially to improve this so-called wisdom. So this wisdom, again, we need to understand, is not the typical knowledge that we emphasize today. Say, for example, today a lot of knowledge being emphasized. Say, knowledge related to the information technology, maybe knowledge related to the worlds, knowledge related to the economics, physics, science, and so many subjects are there. So that's also sometimes we misinterpret as wisdom, but it is typically called as knowledge. So you are accumulating a lot of knowledge, And this is not what is meant here. So what is meant here is entirely a different aspect, where sort of meditative knowledge, meditative wisdom has to be developed. So you can read so many books, you can listen to so many Dhamma sermons, and accordingly you can generate a fair amount of wisdom, and that is not enough. So you have to further involve in meditation in order to further improve your wisdom skills, and this skill actually does not very much involve in thinking. So typically thinking related wisdom is also there. We sometimes call it as Chintame Panya, where by wise reflection, by wise contemplation, kind of analysis, rationalization, one can have some understanding. So that is again limited, because not yet the experience is very evident to us. It is not our own personal experience. It's still someone's experience we are trying to analyze in a superficial manner. So therefore we can't get that kind of a deeper experiential knowledge here. So what is important therefore is this experiential knowledge, experiential wisdom. So while going through, say for example, a meditation, so because of our daily practice, what is the improvement in our wisdom? It's a kind of a deeper understanding. It may happen slowly, and even it's difficult to measure. But still, if one continues one practice for a considerable period of time, then he will understand there are significant changes in one's behavior. Accordingly, one can understand, so this meditation has an effect or impact on me, on my behavior, on my understanding. So this sort of impact is there. So therefore Buddha says, don't neglect this. Don't late to develop this wisdom, because it may take some time. You need to develop certain skills in order to get this wisdom. It is not that you can simply read a book and take, but rather you have to prepare the mind, you have to cultivate certain skills in the mind, then only you are capable of having this wisdom. So therefore this foundation of wisdom consisting of somewhat deep facts about the Buddha's teaching, and so we are now explaining that. So we are in that group, foundation of wisdom. So foundation of wisdom should not be neglected. So this is what Buddha tells related to the wisdom component. And now he is explaining, so what are the factors or what are the various aspects of this wisdom. So one aspect is that looking at the so-called person as six elements. So this is one explanation. So then one has to practically involve in meditation in order to get this wisdom, in order to arouse this wisdom, accumulate this wisdom. So this is the point. So you can understand, so this involves fair amount of book knowledge, some understanding about the Buddha's teaching, and recognizing certain amount of meditation techniques, systems, methods, and applying it practically. So say for example, if we consider the earth element, so typically we think this body belongs to me, this body is one unit, this body is mine, and this is beautiful, it is tall, it is short, it is fat, it is lean. So likewise we identify with the body. But now Buddha is telling this body is not just a single unit, but it consists of so many components. Say for example, head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin. So all these are list explaining various components included in the body. Or these are the components consisting in the body. So when one is looking at in that perspective, so basically his view on compactness, sometimes we call as Ganasanya. We typically think everywhere there are solids, there are sort of one unit operating as one thing. So this compactness, this view of compactness has to be broken. And then one gets a kind of a different perspective. It is not a single thing or single unit or single person, but rather it's an accumulation of so many minute components. Then this, the delusion coming through the compactness breaks. So this is the important part. So the earth element, therefore Buddha says, you can look at the body, be aware that there are so many components are there. It's a combination, it's an accumulation of so many components, and it is not a single person, single body. So when one look at it in that angle, so his view of compactness going to change, going to vanish, because he is understanding now it has so many other components. Altogether we call a person. Say for example, if you consider a car, and we say, okay, this is a car. But if we dismantle this car, so we will understand, okay, there is engine, there are bonnet, doors, tires, various other different components. And altogether, once they are properly fixed in a certain manner, certain pattern, we then give the name a car. But actually, there is no car. Actually, what is a kind of a accumulation, assembly of so many components. So now we are trying to get that perspective, that understanding, which is more productive of wisdom than understanding conventionally, this is so and so, this is a man, this is a woman, this is a child. So likewise, that conventional understanding, conventional reality is actually good for communication, but still it does not take you deeper. So these deep understandings actually help us to break the ignorance, and this is the information that Buddha is giving here in this wisdom aspect of this sutta. Now on the other hand, say he is talking about a water element. So water element also has 12 components which related to the body. And whatever is fluid, whatever is watery, can be considered as water element. Say, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, so tears, and all these things have majority water, majority watery. And therefore, we can say, okay, this is the water element. And again, suppose if we consider fire element. So, we know, I mean, we all have body temperature. So this fire element or heat, which is causing this body temperature. So this again an act or sort of operation of fire element. Similarly, when one is sort of feeling kind of a burning sensation, so that is also due to fire element. Again, we understand, okay, we are subject to aging, and that is also fire element. I mean, we born as a child and become, say, born as an infant, then become a child, then become a youth, then become older. So likewise, we have a kind of an ongoing aging process in the body. And therefore, this whole aging process actually is a task of fire element. Fire element is responsible for aging, anything. So this aging, deterioration, maturing, all are the aspects of fire element. Whenever that is present, we can understand, okay, the fire element is present. And then we can understand the air element. So there are various ongoing winds, downgoing winds. So there are winds in the belly and bowels. So likewise, and in-breath and out-breath. So all these phenomena has air element as its prominent component. Majority. So this is the air element. So when we understand in that respect, so this whole body consists of four elements. So these four elements can be taken into practice. Say for example, if one wants to recognize earth element, so one aspect is, that's what I have explained, so we can recognize, okay, we have different components in the body. Hair, kidney, heart, liver. So likewise, we can name them, we can recognize them. But on the other hand, when we are going deeper, so this kind of understanding is not enough. we may have to further refine our practice, and we have to recognize the presence of each and every element experientially. Well, this is also not that difficult. So this is sometimes called a four-element meditation or Dhatu Manasikara. So we are training the mind to recognize various elements. Say for example, you are doing walking meditation and you are in the walking path and you know your left foot is touching the ground. Typically the ground is hard. So you can recognize this hardness. So the physical ground is now has hardness. So this hardness is being recognized by the mind. So mind has the capacity to recognize hardness. Similarly, if you are walking on a tile, so you understand it is also hard, but again it has some smoothness. And again it may be cold. So likewise, there are various characteristics. So these characteristics are the more fundamental characteristics, more primordial characteristics, primary characteristics of our experience. Actually, based on this, we prepare or we create so much other information, so much other conventions. And ultimately, we forget this more fundamental level experience. So that is what typically happens. So we forget the fundamental experience, the basic experience, but we are getting lost in the derived information or derived experience. On top of this fundamental basic level experience, we are fabricating, we are generating various stuff. But we are going to live in that generated or fabricated stuff, in that fabricated phenomena. It is not real. But our thinking pattern is mostly involved in this fabricated information, papancha. But on the other hand, if one is wise, so now one can try to understand the presence of different elements. Say for example, when you are in walking meditation, when your foot is touching the ground, now you are recognizing hardness. You are recognizing stiffness. You are recognizing cold. You are recognizing heat. You are recognizing movement. So various characteristics are there, they are quite basic, they are quite primary, and we need to recognize them. So that is where beautifully Mataji Jnanarama Mahathera is mentioning, the yogi, the practitioner should understand the language of elements. So these elements are talking in a different language. It is not English, it is not Sinhala, but rather they are expressing their presence using their characteristics. So if one know these characteristics, so using those characteristics we can recognize, we can understand the presence of various elements. So when there is hardness available, so then we can understand, okay, this earth element is present. When roughness is available, when we can recognize roughness, we can determine, we can decide, okay, earth element is present. When weight or heaviness is available, again we can decide, we can recognize the earth element is present. When we experience softness, smoothness, lightness, also indicate the presence of earth element. So you can see, experientially we can recognize the presence of earth element. It is not merely a book knowledge, but rather experientially. You can experience earth element. The presence of earth element. Say you do sitting meditation. At that time, assume that you are able to feel touching sensation, or you are able to feel the weight of your hand, or maybe certain places are being touched thoroughly. Assume that your foot, sole, being touched by the floor. So that is producing some kind of a feeling, some hardness feeling is there. So likewise, even while sitting, you can recognize hardness. You can recognize softness. You can recognize roughness, smoothness. All these things you can even recognize while sitting. While walking, you can recognize them. While standing, you can recognize them. While lying down, you can recognize them. So while being in any kind of a posture, you can recognize. So therefore, in order to recognize various element characteristics, there is no any sort of a posture But while being in any posture, you can recognize these characteristics. So similarly, you can recognize the presence of earth, water element. So wherever you feel flowing, if you are able to pay your attention to sweating, so the sweating indicates the presence of water element. While urinating is happening, so if you are keeping your attention, then you can recognize the presence of water element. So likewise, if one is capable, one can recognize the presence of water element. Typically, we say in Vipassana, recognition of water element is difficult. So therefore, yogis are not immediately encouraged to recognize water element. But if one is well developed and one has well refined mindfulness, clear comprehension, so one can try to recognize water element. Again, if we consider fire element, say you can recognize the presence of fire element. Say you are experiencing in-breath and out-breath. Comparatively, maybe in-breath is more cooler than the out-breath. Out-breath is little warmer. So this is the indication that the fire element is present in the breath. So when breath is touching our nostril, we can understand it is cool. When it is going out, when the exhale happens, it is warm. So that indicates kind of a temperature difference, and that is a characteristic of this fire element. So whenever you feel any sort of cold, any sort of heat, so you can recognize the fire element. While you are walking, you can recognize that. Is it the koya mat or the sand path? Is it warm or is it cold? So if you are able to recognize this cold or heat, then you can understand, okay, the fire element is present. So whenever you are able to, suppose your two hands are touching each other, and if you can recognize the warmth of one hand to the other hand, so that is the presence of fire element. If there is any legs are being touched, not only the weight, but even the temperature can be recognized. Temperature can be understood. So this is the presence of the fire element. And then we can understand the air element. So this is the most easiest part in a way. Say when your abdomen is moving, so that is indication that air element is present, because the movement is characteristic of the fire, air element, kind of pushing, movement, are all the characteristics of the air element. So you can understand now, if you apply these characteristics, if you are trying to recognize these characteristics in your meditation, so we are in Dhatu Manasikara, so we are in element meditation, so we can understand various presence, the presence of various elements. And what is the advantage? So that is what more important in our practice. So typically, we give some importance to the internal elements. So we value the internal earth element, internal water element, internal, say, air element, internal fire element. But on the other hand, when we put it to the outside, so outside also consisting of earth element, outside also consists of fire element, air element, water element. Say, if you consider a river, whatever, a reservoir, so it has water element. If you consider, say, table, a car, so all are majority the earth element. If you consider a wind, mostly it is air element. So likewise, so there are, I mean, if you consider a fire, so that is the fire element. So likewise, so you can understand, so these elements not only in the inside, but also available in outside. So more and more you understand that inside earth element and the outside earth elements are merely earth element. So that actually is an insight. So typically, as I said, we give some prominence, some importance to internal elements. But once you understand these are merely elements and they have these characteristics, and those characteristics are not unique to the internal elements, but also it is applicable to the external elements, and then therefore one can understand, okay, the internal earth elements and the external earth elements are simply merely earth element. Internal water element and the external water element are merely the water element. Internal fire element and the external fire element are merely the fire element. Internal air element and the external air element are merely the air element. So we lose this boundary, me and outside, I and outside. So this boundary we lose, it become blurred. So there is no very defined boundary now. Now everything appear sort of blurred. Internal, external, that difference has disappeared, faded away. So this is quite important. Because we do grasping, we do holding, because we attribute a value to something. When something is expensive, when something is important, when something is beautiful, when something is sort of expensive. So likewise, we have different parameters to give some value. So if it is valuable, then we grasp it, we hold it, we try to possess it. So those points are there. But when one recognizes internally what is available are elements, externally what is available are elements, and they are the elements, there is no any difference, internal and external boundary going to be blurred. So that boundary is no more. Now your perspective is entirely different. So now you will feel, okay, everywhere elements. Whole physical world is nothing but elements. So I'll add the space element also here. So this space element is introduced here. So there are kind of cavities available in the body. Say inside the ears, the holes are there. Inside nostrils, you have, there's a cavity. And say at our stomach, that's again a cavity. In our, say, colons and this intestines, so there are cavities. And so likewise, there are cavities, hollow areas are available. There the space element is predominant. But actually, space element is not taken for vipassana, maybe due to its subtle appearance. But on the other hand, we can easily recognize the presence of earth element. We can easily recognize the presence of air element. We can easily recognize the presence of fire element. So if we can recognize these various characteristics, then they indicate or they tell that that respective element is present there. More and more we look at like that, more and more we practice like that, so we'll understand, okay, it is nothing but elements. Internal are elements, external are also elements. So you lose the self-view, or at least dilutes the self-view, because now you are not introducing a self to any of these internal elements, because they are similar to the external elements. And all these elements are so transient. So once you are having that kind of a deeper understanding, then the result is that loosened grasping or loosened self-view, thinking there is a person here, kind of personality view, Sakkaya Ditti, has a large impact on this compactness view. So when we take one unit, when we consider every experience as one thing, I am experiencing, I am suffering, I am happy. So we are, at that way, we are sort of attributing a single person to this whole experience. But when this whole experience is defined with respect to various elements, so there is no sort of a one unit, but it's a kind of a combination, accumulation of so much of experiences. So therefore, the perspective become different. The beginning we had a different perspective, and once we know they are merely elements and they are so transient, so impermanent, and I have no control at all over them, so then this grasping going to be reduced. So therefore, this Dhatu Manasikara, the element meditation, is more conducive for wisdom. Say for example, if you do Metta meditation, Buddha Anusati, so it also has wisdom component, but not this much. So therefore, Dhatu Manasikara is fairly a very good meditation technique to improve our wisdom. to change our perspective related to our experience. So this is a kind of a turning point. And I like to keep the this other element, that is consciousness element, to the next day, because that is quite important, and it is worthy of analyzing it more deeper. So I like to wind up today with this information, and if there is any sort of a question related to this explanation, or if you have any other question, so feel free to use this chance, and you are now allowed to ask any of your questions.
Thank you, Bhante, Sadhu, for any new participants to this group, welcome. If you do have questions, feel free to raise your hand in, under the participants list, or we can also unmute you and you may ask the questions directly yourself. So one of the questions, Bhante, that I received, if we find difficult to feel the breath around the nose, can we try to notice the movement of the chest to calm myself?
Yeah, you can use. Actually, it is not no harmful. So different techniques are possible. Say, if you want to calm down yourself, you can use the physical aspect of the body. Because every time when the mind is agitated, so it has an impact on the bodily movements, it has an impact on your various bodily processes. Say, for example, if you become afraid of something, then the heartbeat increases. Those are very obvious changes. So if you get angry, so the mind, again the heartbeat may increase. Again, some sort of a holding happens in the mind. So likewise, all these different mental changes has a physical connection. So you can divert your attention to these physical changes. And as a result, when you are analyzing, or rather not the analyzing, but when you are observing these physical changes, the outcome is your mind calms down. Because you are not promoting, or you are not fertilizing this mental process. Rather, the energy being diverted to the physical process, and you are observing the physical process or the physical result, physical outcome. You are now not pumping enough resources to the mental process to sustain. So as a result, mental process disappears. Mental process fades away. So that's a good technique we are using. So when you are not capable of immediately tackling or handling the mental activities, in order to handle that, you need to have a fair amount of mindfulness so that you can be face to face with the, say, defilements. But if you are not yet confident about it, you can of course divert your attention to the physical component, physical changes. As a result, the physical changes going to be disappeared, and again the mental process also going to be calmed down.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. And the next question, are the base element and consciousness element not taken for Vipassana practice because these are far less tangible than the other four? So we are expected to simply observe the four. Is that correct?
Not really. Basically, the among six elements, the four elements are more physical. So in Dhatu Manasikara we are using four elements. Space element can be used for reflection, kind of a logical, rational analysis when one is doing. That is also important. But physical experience, we are using four elements. But on the other hand, if we consider the consciousness element, so the one attribute or one task of consciousness element is to know various feelings. Whenever you are capable of recognizing various feelings, that indicates the presence of the consciousness. So that's why I kept it for the next week, because Buddha is explaining consciousness element based on its task. So here he is mentioning the task of consciousness is to know various feeling tones. Whether is it pleasurable feeling, is it a painful feeling, is it a equanimous feeling. So this kind of a distinction, this kind of a separate knowing is possible because of the activity of the consciousness. The consciousness have that vijanati, so this recognition, separately identifying, separately recognizing. So that is a kind of a skill this consciousness has. So whenever you therefore understand there is a pleasurable feeling, there is a painful feeling, there is a neutral feeling, there is happiness, there is sorrow. So when you understand that attribute, so this is a function of the consciousness. So like I have mentioned now, say, when you feel hardness, when you feel softness, when you feel heaviness. So those are the characteristics which indicate the presence of earth element. Similarly, when you can recognize, okay, this is a pleasurable feeling, this is a sort of, this is a painful feeling, this is a neutral feeling. So it's a, this is a presence of the, it indicates the presence of the consciousness. It is because of the recognition, cognition happened through the consciousness element that we are capable of distinctly recognize these different feeling tones. So therefore, according to that approach, Buddha is explaining the consciousness element. So I am going to explain that in next week. Actually, that is on next Wednesday, because it's worthy of understanding consciousness element separately, and it is having some interesting information. So therefore, that is being used for our vipassana practice. It is not that we are not using consciousness element. Actually, we do use consciousness element.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. The next question. Dear Bhante, based on personal meditation experiences, there seems to be a difference between the definition of the space element here in the Dhamma talk. Space element here, specifically internal elements, are defined as holes and crevices within the body, but based on personal meditation experience, it seems that even within the holes and crevices, such as in the nostril, there are still other elements present, but rather between the elements there seems to be a space. Did I misunderstand the space element?
No, actually, all the elements are present. Say, for example, if you consider the physical component, physical side, all these five elements are present, we can see. Say, for example, even in water, not only water element is present. Even the earth element, some amount of earth element is present. So that's why we can use them to turn turbines. Because when the water being hit to the turbine blades, so that is, then the turbine starts to rotate. So that indicates the presence of the earth element available in the water. And assume that you have a pressure gun. So you, if it is being sort of aimed to you, so it can even hit. So and even the water being used to cut even what you call the metals. So that means that water element has the earth element. What I mean is not that water element has the earth element, but when we consider the typical presence of water, say in a river, it is not only water element present. In the river, there is earth element also present. And again, kind of a movement. The air element is present, flowing. The water element is present. And water, of course, has a temperature. You can boil it, you can heat it. So that indicates the presence of the heat element. So likewise, and again, in between the water molecules, there are spaces also available. So likewise, that's why, I mean, when you are sort of making ice, the volume changes are going to happen. So likewise, all the five elements are present. When we are considering various components or various physical aspects, it is not that river simply has water element, nothing else. It is not that air simply has air element, nothing else. But even the air, even say for example inhale and exhale, as these five elements. So that's why when you are inhaling, if you feel cold, so that indicates the fire element, not the air element. But when you feel the movement of the air, so that indicates the air element. And when the air touches the nostril, so you have some sensation. So that indicates the earth element. So likewise, even in the inhale and exhale, these elements are present.
Thank you, Bhatti. That is all of the questions that I've received. Are there any other questions online? Looks like there's maybe one more.
Yeah.
We use noticing elements to enable us not to get attached or hate to our focuses.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I mean. When we are recognizing more and more elements and the presence of various elements, that internal external boundary going to be blurred. It's going to disappear. Now, when you understand this body consists of four elements, another body consists of four elements, so you are losing the sort of distinction. You are now losing the kind of an importance that you are attributing towards the body, thinking this body is important or another body is important, another body is beautiful, this body is beautiful. But when you understand, okay, there is not just one single body here, but rather it's an accumulation of so much of elements. So that's a kind of an insight that loosens our grip, that loosens our grasping, our clinging. So that is quite useful. That is what is important. That's what the Buddha is giving a kind of a simile in this Satipatthana, where when you are considering elements, so you are losing the compactness, and again you are losing the the notion of a person. Instead of the notion of person, the notion of individual, we are changing the attitudes, that changing the perspective. This is a kind of an accumulation of elements, not a single person, but an accumulation of elements. So internally an accumulation of elements, externally an accumulation of elements, and all these elements doesn't behave according to my wish. They are not under my control, and they are constantly subject to various change. So these all understandings, these all insights are quite helpful to reduce our attachment, to reduce our grip, to reduce our grasping. So that is what the outcome of this Dhatu Manasikara, element meditation. So more one is involved in this Dhatu Manasikara, so one starts to let go of any kind of a holding. Suppose you are holding your car, you like your car, so you are really sort of attached to the car. But if you can recognize, okay, this car is nothing but four elements, another car is also just four elements, so what's the difference then? Why are you attributing so much of importance, so much of value to this car? That is maybe just because of our ignorance. Just we are having some ayonuso manasikara, just in the surface level, not penetrating enough, not going deeper. And that is because of that we have the misunderstanding or wrong understanding, thinking that this car is important, this car is valuable than another car or another whatever it is. So that sort of understanding is quite important in order to loosen our attachment. And therefore, the element meditation is quite useful in meditation and being encouraged to practice. That's the whole purpose of this session, to give you enough confidence that why we are doing this. This has a lot of ground information available here. That's why we are doing it. Even though we started with very simple steps like left, right, rising, falling. So all these are very simple techniques we are trying to accommodate during our initial stages. But later when our mind become more concentrated, when it is more mindful, then these deeper information and the deeper understanding, insights are possible. Because mind now is fairly wise enough to get these insights, and as a result one become quite wise. So with less passion or less grasping, less attachment, and then the mind is free. Mind is not sort of burdened, but mind is ready to let go. Mind is ready to give up. Now the mind has some space. Mind has the clarity. Mind is not holding. Mind is not congested. Mind has its own wisdom. Mind has its own freedom, because nothing to hold. So we are, when we think or when we assume that something is important, something is beautiful, something is worthy, then only we are holding, then only we are grasping. But when we clearly understand there is nothing to grasp, there is nothing important, it is a combination, it's an accumulation of so much of elements. Internal elements and external elements are both merely elements. And that actually breaks off this, it's a kind of breaking this compactness view, and this breaking of this, the value that we have unnecessarily given. So that actually reduces the grasping, reduces the attachment, and that is the freedom of mind. So that produces fair amount of freedom of mind. Yes.
Thank you, Benji. May we take another question?
Maybe 1 minute. Try to answer that shortly.
Okay.
In a short form. Yeah.
A short question. Can we observe the feelings and elements together?
Rather than observing them together, what I like to say is they are very close. It's a kind of a change of perspective. Say, for example, when you are walking, assume that your foot is touching the ground and it is producing some kind of a feeling. Mostly it is a neutral feeling. So that is one way of looking at it. On the other hand, you can recognize, okay, there is hardness, there is softness, there is movement. So you can look at it in that perspective as well, in that view as well. So therefore the rupakhanda, the form, and the vedanakhanda, the feelings, are very closely related. It is the kind of a perspective in our mind, which way or which angle we are looking at them. Are we looking at them in the element angle, or are we looking at in the feeling tone angle? So they are well interrelated. So therefore, I mean, rather than trying to look at both at the same time, at the same moment, you can give prominence to one at a time. Say when you are looking at your experience in terms of the elements, you can look at it. You can try to recognize the presence of various elements, because it is the recognition, I mean, distinct recognition of various elements is also necessary. I mean, that is improving our clear comprehension, sampajanya. And after recognition of these distinct information, distinct characteristics, then only it is leading to the common characteristics, understanding how they are behaving. So more and more we observe the behavior of these elements, they are productive of more wisdom. One will understand the impermanent nature, the transient nature. One will understand the unsatisfactoriness, and one will understand the non-self characteristic. So likewise, so when you are in the element meditation, it is important to keep the element side open. And on the other hand, when you are in the Vedananupassana, it is important to look at them in the feeling tone, in the feeling aspect. They are very close, by the way. So therefore, I mean, one time you can look at elements, element angle, and after practicing in that manner, if you like, you can switch to feeling tone, that is the Vedananupassana angle. So not both at the same time, but time to time you can switch. No harm in switching, but not both at the same moment.
Thank you. That will be all questions for today.
Yeah. So thank you very much for the participation. Actually, I like to wind up quickly today because I have to attend another activity. So I am actually broadcasting this through Kalalgoda in Colombo, and hope to meet you all on next Wednesday as usual at 7 a.m. Sri Lanka time as our typical English Sutta teaching. Thank you very much for participation.